So let's try it. On the toll-free line, you're on the air with Michael Lindemann. Good evening.
Yes, sir. I'm from Wisconsin.
In Milwaukee,
and,
right?
One night, everybody in Milwaukee saw this one UFO going over the city. It was like it was playing a joke, but me and some friends of mine were given some papers. Do you remember Stephen Schwartz's experiments with the Navy?
When did you see this UFO?
72 or 73, I think.
All right. And you say everybody in Milwaukee saw it? Was it in?
They were all talking about it on the air. And cause I remembered how Dr. Heineck told us how to judge how far it was by our thumb.
All right. By holding your thumb up, I guess. Michael, there have been a lot of sightings like this, like the ones you talked about in Milwaukee, where massive numbers of people have seen something. Is that part of the great body of evidence that leads us toward the inescapable conclusion that they are here?
Well, Art, I would have to say it is. It's very interesting. First of all, for this caller, just to know, I was born and raised in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Sad to say, I left in 1967 and didn't hear about the great Milwaukee UFO sighting of 1972. So if she has any newspaper clips, I'd love to have them. But I would like to point out that that period, 1972, 1973, was an absolute peak period for UFO and alien contact experiences all over the country, and some very classic cases occurred roughly between 72 and 75. For example, the fantastic abduction case of in Pascagoula, Mississippi, which occurred in, I believe, 1973. The Travis Walton abduction, which occurred in 1975. Lots and lots of other events which occurred all around the country. Of course, Linda Howe would point out that that period of time was a very hot time for abductions around the country. The mid-70s is one of the peak periods for that. So, yes, we see, this is one of the aggravating things about the phenomenon, that it seems to come in waves. And we've seen some classic waves, and that was part of one of those waves.
Are we in a peak or a valley now?
Well, as regards sightings of craft, the classic sightings type, according to the Center for UFO Studies, we're in a valley, oddly enough. However, it would appear that the phenomenon is changing and that the nature of contact is changing. We are no longer seeing as many lights in the sky, but we're seeing a lot more gray. More grays in the bedroom. That's a very different kind of encounter.
I'll say.
And I think it says something. We can't prove this, but I'll just go on. They have to do something. But second of all, I think the aliens have something to do with it. They are modulating a process. And I think that they have shown us lots and lots of lights in the sky for a couple of decades. You know, back in the 60s, it was very unpopular to even mention that there might be somebody on board, for crying out loud. You know, you were a bit of a lunatic, even in UFO research, if you said, well, what about the people who are driving the thing? And that has, of course, changed a lot. But it wasn't until the mid-70s that we started to get comfortable with that. And now, of course, come mid-80s, we're comfortable with the idea, well, comfortable is not quite the right word, but at least we're getting used to the idea that there may indeed be beings who are coming and meeting us, experimenting with us, if you will.
We are conversant with the idea. In other words, because of all the programs, sightings, contact, the one coming on Roswell, programs like that, we're beginning to get to be conversant with regard to the idea.
That is correct.
All right. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Michael Lindemann. Hi.
Good evening, Art. John from Richland.
Richland, Washington. Yes, John.
The facts on Red Mercury, I just sent you that.
Oh, great. Thank you.
What I wanted to say was it's a cheap man's way of making neutron bombs, and this stuff really does exist. But I'd like to ask Mr. Lindemann a question in that regard. Is that do you think that some of this weapons development is still based on some perhaps malevolent intentions on the visitors from wherever they may be?
It is a good question. It's a kind of a natural extension of what you were saying earlier, Michael.
Yes, it is.
Why are we developing all this weaponry?
Right.
And if they're warm, fuzzy little guys,
well, let me not be a saying they're warm, fuzzy little guys. I didn't say that, and I'm not sure that's true. I would say there's a diversity of types probably present, and that some of them don't pose a threat, but some of them possibly do pose a threat. Certainly back in the 1940s and early 50s, our government, that is to say the secret faction that was dealing with this information, was quite convinced that we were dealing with some kind of an invasion, and they wondered if there was a military response. They tried a few tests to see if there was a military response, and they quickly learned that if we approached the subject in a military fashion, we would get blown out of the sky. There was really no contest. Recently, a military man said to me that they stopped interpreting it as a military problem quite a long time ago for the simple reason that there is no military response. That does not mean there isn't a military problem, but it does mean that we are not properly positioned to take a military action which actually gets results we want. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it's a different problem. Therefore, it's a getting used to it problem. It's a handling the social perceptions problem. It's a perhaps a diplomatic problem. There are people who think we're in diplomatic contact. I can't prove that, but I have heard some stories which I think may be true. So we're faced here with, what do you do if you are up against overwhelming odds? If you are not only the military of some, you know, little third world republic, but you are actually, you know, you are the combined military of all the superpowers on Earth. You have all the guns and all the money, and you know there isn't a clue. There isn't a chance.
Well, I know this. I wouldn't, I'll go up to Michael Tyson and threaten to punch his lights out.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it's very similar. You don't take a military attitude towards somebody who can...
That's right, who laughs at you and then squashes you down like a bug.
That's exactly
right. Exactly. That's the problem. Now, there is no sign, Art, this is my personal interpretation of all available data that I have seen. There is no sign of an intention to take over the planet. There is no sign of overt hostility, but there are clear signs that if we initiate hostilities, we learn right quick who's in charge.
Yeah. All right, on the toll-free line, you're on the air with Michael Lindemann. Good evening. Where are you calling from, please?
Grants Pass.
Grants Pass, Oregon, yes.
I personally think that aliens are a lot of garbage, and the reason being that the human mind, I see, as the most powerful tool in the universe, and because of its power, it can create or conjure up or any number of ways you want to express it, these phenomena. Now, the other thing is that in addition to that, I see that man has always been in the universe, on the Earth, and because of that, there have been many cultures, there have been many civilizations, and quite possibly these artifacts and phenomena that we've been finding are a result of these past civilizations.
All right. What about it, Michael? Monsters from the id?
Well, I didn't interpret him as saying only monsters from the id. I think that's one possibility. Basically, if we look at all the data, I think there are three broad possibilities. First of all, we have an absolutely extraordinary degree of human delusion. Delusion in people who test normal, who test intelligence, who test non-pathological.
Yes.
That's one possibility. Possibility number two, some governmental or quasi-governmental entity is in possession of an extraordinary array of absolutely bizarre technologies, and they're using them with a vengeance all over the place with no visible agenda. But that's the second possibility. Third possibility is aliens. Any way you slice it, we've got a serious problem here. Neither one of those possibilities is trivial. We have to find out what it is, and to treat it with a completely open mind, we have to accept that some cases may fall in any one of those boxes. But I will say this. On balance, I believe data shows that the best probability is that some cases are alien.
All right.
And I will stand on that.
All right. On the first-time caller line, you're on the air with Michael Lindemann. Good evening. Where are you calling from?
Michael, let me turn down my radio here.
Right. All right. Thank you. Please do that. Turn it off. And also tell us...
I'm calling from Seattle.
Seattle. All right.
Okay. I got a couple of questions here. Can I shoot with them?
Shoot with them, yes.
Okay. First of all, that Roswell thing, the declaration, my phone might be bugged, by the way, because of that. I hope you understand that. Okay, Michael?
No problem.
All right. I told the person about it that he has to write to you. He needs to know if he has to tell you what he saw.
No, he doesn't have to tell me anything.
He just asked for the declaration.
Send he can tell me if he wants to, but I don't. He doesn't have to tell me anything.
Send a self-addressed stamped envelope, and that's all you need to do, ma'am.
Okay, then the second thing I needed to tell is there was a woman from Portland. I had a long time trying to get through to you. There's a woman from Portland that saw some circles in the land.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I can get her phone number or if I can just report that on the phone here.
Well, do you mean the crop circles that have been reported in the Portland area over the last couple of weeks, the recent report?
Yes, because in Wisconsin, back in, I think it was about 89 or 1990,
mm-hmm.
they were having a lot of crop circles in their land, too. And they found a dignified, like this former caller that just called and thought it was a bunch of crock, that there were UFOs. It was a small town and a lot of dignified folks. And they saw these vessels and they saw circles in their croplands.
All right, thank you. Yes, we're very well aware of the Portland crop circles, aren't we, Michael?
Yes, we are. But I think it's important to note, first of all, the crop circles have been occurring in this country in quite a few different states from time to time over the last number of years. It's not just an English phenomenon, of course. Now, we also have to say that we now know from the English experience that some crop circles, including some of the very unusual, large, highly ornate crop formations, are hoaxes. It is possible to hoax some of these, but it is also next to impossible, according to our best information, to hoax some of the features of a genuine circle, such as the work of Dr. W.C. Levengood out of Pinelandia Labs, the work that he's done showing the changes in the cell pit structure, showing changes in growth rates and germination rate, various changes, even changes in the electromagnetic behavior of the plant materials, saying that this is the stuff that can't be hoaxed. It takes real work to test this stuff.
Mm.
Now, that testing has not been done, to my knowledge, on the Oregon material that Linda mentioned earlier, that she's trying to get some samples. It would
I'm
be important
sure,
to find that
that's
out.
That's right. I'm sure it's on the way. On the toll-free line, you're on the air with Michael Lindemann. Good evening.
Art, how you doing?
Just fine. Where are you, sir?
Albuquerque. Mike from Albuquerque.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Lindemann.
Yes, sir.
My father was reading to me from a book by a man named George Andrews this afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And in the book, it states that in one particular county in Pennsylvania in the 1970s, in a one-year period, there was over 130 UFO sightings where there was an association with Bigfoot. Are you familiar with any of this?
Well, I confess I'm not familiar with the Pennsylvania sightings, but I am very definitely familiar with claims of Bigfoot in association with some UFO sightings. Bigfoot, of course, is another of these extremely strange, anomalous occurrences. There's good evidence that there is such a thing as Bigfoot, the Sasquatch up in the Seattle and northwest area there, and, of course, other manifestations of the same phenomenon in other parts of the world, other parts of the country.
Right.
Native Americans have been reporting this for hundreds of years. There are a few cases, and Linda Howe is someone who's brought some of these cases forward, where there have been sightings of a seemingly Bigfoot-type character in association even with the cattle mutilation phenomenon. So there may be a link. I can't prove it, but I think so.
Okay. Are you familiar with the work of Dr. Grover Krantz?
Can't say I am.
Oh, okay. He's an anthropologist, professor of anthropology at the University of Washington.
Right.
And he has amassed, he's been studying the Sasquatch phenomenon for a long time. And it seems now that there's several scientists that are no longer looking at the Sasquatch phenomenon as a let's prove its existence, you know, an anthropological standpoint. It's now being studied in a zoological standpoint.
Right. What is it?
I mean,
that's a rhetorical question. The question is not, they know it's there, but now the question is, what is it?
Yeah, the biggest piece of evidence is the dermal ridges.
Right.
Are the fingerprints on the feet. That'd be virtually impossible to fake.
Mm-hmm.
And they're finding them left and right. I was curious if you, there was a large connection.
All right, thank you. And you do find there to be a connection.
Well, no, what I would like to say is, since Bigfoot is a little outside my range of personal study, I would only say that there have been some researchers who have established a possible connection. I don't rule it out. I think it's a very provocative possibility.
All right, well, since we've asked about that, how about Loch Ness?
Oh, sure, and after that, let's bring in
I mean, there has been serious scientific inquiry Loch Ness, and they've had readings.
I don't want to make light of Loch Ness. I personally would be thrilled to bits if the Loch Ness monster exists, and there's a darn good chance it does, not only there, but in Lake Champlain and the Ogopogo and some lake up in, I don't know, British Columbia or wherever it is. It is absolutely likely, Art, that there are lots of bizarre life forms on this planet that we haven't found. Every now and then something washes up on a beach on some shore of some ocean. We find there's a whole new class of whale or a whole new class of squid or some other creature we've never seen before. Exactly. Eels 100 feet long. It's exactly. Quite possible. I'm not sure, however, that there is any established connection between Loch Ness and UFOs.
All right. On the wild card line, you're on the air with Michael Linneman. Hello, where are you?
Yes, this is Dan from the University District in Seattle.
Hi, Dan.
Hi. And, Michael, it's been a few months since I've talked to you, but I was the one who called about asking questions about the reptilians a few months ago, and you were very kind and gracious in giving me your time on that information. I'm wondering, have you ever exchanged information with Mark McCandlish?
Yes, in fact, we had an interesting exchange on this very show a couple of months ago.
I must have missed it then, because I was very fascinated.
Well, actually, caller, that's what led to the McCandlish appearance on this program.
I see, okay. Yeah, I thought he had a lot to say, and I'll go ahead and hang up, and I wonder if you could just say a few words about his information on UFO technology.
All right, we'll do that. Michael, hold on just one moment. Michael Linneman is my guest. We'll be right back. For those of you who are having a hard time hearing it or straining to hear it on some distant radio station, my advice would be to call your local radio affiliate, the local radio station in your area, and inquire about Dreamland. And toward that end, if you would like assistance, let me give you our network telephone number, and they will give you assistance in trying to get Dreamland on your radio station. It is area code 503-664-8829. Now, do not call it now. Call it beginning Tuesday during the business week. That's area code 503-664-8829. Michael, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Not a lot of time before the bottom of the hour. Let's try a quick call on the toll-free line. You're on the air with Michael Linneman. Hello.
Yes, this is Tom from San Diego KOGO.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. I am an ESP researcher, and of course, I'd like to have a couple questions with Mr. Linneman. Edgar Cayce, he speaks of the future contact with UFOs, and ESP research indicates that there is going to be sizable Earth activity in the near future. How does this coincide with your 2020 predictions of what we are going to be living through in the next 5 years with the rings of fire that are very active right now?
All right. Big Earth movements, predictions by people like Casey, true.
Well, what I can say is that there is no geological precedent that we know of for the kind of Earth changes that have been predicted by some people. For example, Gordon Michael Scallion, who firmly believes that the western third of the United States will simply be inundated.
That's right.
I am not in any position to say these people are right or wrong. What I will say is that the probability that they're right is extremely low unless something absolutely unprecedented occurs on this planet.
Which is, of course, what they're predicting.
That is exactly what they're predicting. I have to work from known information, known trends, and I would have to say that in my view, the likelihood of Earth changes on that scale is extremely small. On the other hand, we know that the West Coast is a sitting duck for major earthquakes. No question. I live in Santa Barbara. I'm going to move. I tell you, I think this area is in for some serious seismic activity.
All right, Michael, very quickly, about a minute left. UFO Technologies, going back a call. He wanted your comment on Mark McCandlish and some of what he has to say.
Actually, I'd like to comment on that in some length, so let's do it after the break, but I will say very briefly, Mark has alerted me to two important things. Number one, that it is quite probable that our government is in possession of what he refers to as alien replication vehicles, if we can say more about that. And he has alerted me to a new generation of lighter-than-aircraft that we have built, which have nothing to do with alien technology, but which are mistaken for UFOs, and in particular for the very large diamond, triangular-shaped UFOs sighted in the western states. It may very well be that this is a lighter-than-air conventional technology.
I would believe that because it certainly would fit the one sighting that I've had. We will also give you the address again. Get a pencil for the Roswell Declaration when we come back. So get a pencil and a piece of paper and get ready. This is the CBC Radio Network in Dreamland.
listening to Dreamland on Talk Radio 102 FM.
From the Kingdom of Nine, you're hearing Dreamland with Art Bell. To participate in the program, call toll-free 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers, area code 702-727-1222. Or the wildcard line at 702-727-1295. This is the CBC Radio Network.
It certainly is. Tell you what, a couple things. One, we're going to restrict our toll-free line to east of the Rocky Mountains for the next 25 minutes of the program. Remember, only those of you east of the Rocky Mountains on the toll-free line at 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies only. Now, in addition, I do want to get this out again. Very, very important. The Roswell Declaration, to get it, to sign it, to be part of it, all you've got to do is send a self-addressed stamped envelope, no money, self-addressed stamped envelope to Michael Lindemann, 3463 State Street, Box 264, Santa Barbara, California, zip code 93105. 93105. Is that right, Michael?
That's correct.
All right, good. Here's a fax that just came in. When Michael Lindemann mentioned the newly discovered age of the Sphinx, he must have been referring to the show broadcast a few months ago called The Mystery of the Sphinx. In the show, it was also reported that a new chamber had been discovered at the base of the Sphinx, as had been predicted by Casey. Unfortunately, the process of getting permission to open that chamber was being met with resistance from the Egyptian bureaucracy. Please ask Michael if he has any information on whether there's been any progress in this area.
Well, I'm glad your listener's informed. That is, everything he said is true. Unfortunately, I do not have an update. I am in touch with some people who are monitoring that situation very closely, and I would like to, check with them and perhaps comment on that next time you and I talk, Art. And you could even pass it along to your audience if I'm not on the program. But right now, I'm not aware of any progress, and the person who faxed it is absolutely correct. The Egyptian government is very much resisting this. Now, there's a reason for this. It's not just a question of whether you just go digging in Egyptian soil without permission. It is a... in fact, the Egyptian government may be receiving pressure from other governments much more powerful than itself. Because if they open that chamber and break loose a library of information that is more than 10,000 years old, there is no telling how many sacred cows will get butchered over that.
All right, well, we'll stay in touch on that issue. On the toll-free line, you're on the air with Michael Lindemann. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Lindemann. This is Todd in SeaTac. You've made repeated reference to Zachariah Sitchin and his work, The 12th Planet.
Yes.
Where he states that the ancient Sumerian tablets, of which they've found thousands, state that the Nephilim, as they're called, came to Earth and genetically engineered Homo sapien from Homo erectus. How do you feel about Mr. Sitchin's statements and the accuracy of them as compared to the Sumerian tablets?
Well, first of all, you're asking me, can I read Sumerian and can I interpret the huge amount of Sumerian information in the manner of Mr. Sitchin? The fact is, I cannot. And very few people on Earth can. So the fact is that very few people actually challenge Mr. Sitchin on the level of his scholarship. They certainly challenge his conclusions because they're outrageous. We can say that without any quibble. But the fact is that Mr. Sitchin is among a handful of people qualified to interpret this material. And I find his interpretation most fascinating. But I really can't comment on it more than that.
All right. On the toll-free line, you're on the air with Michael Lindemann. Good evening. Where are you calling from?
St. Louis.
St. Louis, yes, sir.
Mr. Lindemann.
Yes, sir.
During your talks, you mentioned the continuity of government program.
Yes.
I have a question. Are your partner, Ralph Steiner, in a radio show on the Pacifica station of Berkeley a few years ago, showed military alien collaboration similar to Bob Lazar. Could this be a major reason for the continuing cover-up?
Well, if it were happening, I would say that would be a very cover-upable kind of fact, okay? Now, I can't say it's happening, but I will say certainly the United States has built enormous underground bases. Whether there are aliens in them or not remains to be seen. However, I would like to point out a new book that will not necessarily be well-known to your listening audience, that I think is very important. It's called Taken, and it's subtitled Inside the Alien Human Abduction Agenda. It is by a woman named Carla Turner. And by the way, Carla would make a fine guest for a future show. Carla is a PhD professor, herself an abductee, as is her husband. She has written a book about 8 people, 6 of whom believe there were human beings working in some cooperative fashion with alien abductors. This, wow, of course, is an extraordinary claim, but yes, Carla is no fool.
Michael, can you get me contact information?
I sure can.
All right, good. Good. We'll look forward to it. She sounds good. On the toll-free line, you're on the air with Michael Lindemann. Where are you calling from, please?
Hello?
Yes, where are you, sir?
Oh, Raleigh, North Carolina, listening on WCRY of QK Barina.
Very good.
I have a question for your guest. This harks back to a comment that someone else had made earlier in the show regarding the differences of opinion, let's say, among the UFO research community.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, I read Jacques Vallée's book Revelations,
mm-hmm,
in which he there's virtually no one in the ufology research area that doesn't come away with a bloody nose. Everyone from John Lear to Bill Cooper to Major Kehoe, everybody else. Vallée is considered the preeminent ufologist in the world today, and yet reading his book Revelations, you come away, his basic thesis is that much of the ballyhoo about UFOs and abductions and so forth is part true. There's something going on out there, but much of it is generated by the military intelligence complex, and they've so well infiltrated and co-opted the research efforts that it's hard to tell anymore who's telling the truth, what's manufactured.
That's true.
All right, I get the message. Can I comment on that?
Yeah, please go right. And it's a good one. And by the way, some of the people he mentioned are not at the center of the scientific community investigating this phenomenon. But
that is true.
Go ahead, Michael.
All right. Bottom line, I have great respect for Jacques Vallée. Jacques Vallée is an important, you might say, and almost a dissident voice in UFO research today, but he operates at an almost unique level of subtlety. And for that reason, he cannot be ignored, even if he is making statements that make everybody angry, and he does that on a regular basis. But the fact is that Dr. Vallée is basically saying our analysis tends to be too simplistic, too linear, too Western scientistic. We are trying too hard to squeeze a round peg in a square hole. This ufology business is not a bunch of aliens that look approximately like us driving around in Toyota spacecraft. It isn't like that at all, he says. It's much more complicated, much more subtle. And he's right. I'm convinced he's right. Now, that does not mean that everything he says is right. I think Dr. Vallée takes pot shots, sometimes because he's aggravated at the stupidity of some ufologists. So I would say read his book with respect, but also take it with a grain of salt. Revelations in particular is a book flawed by a number of simple factual inaccuracies, which he has had the graciousness to cop to on a few occasions. Dr. Vallée, if nothing else, has done us a service by saying, look, it isn't all that simple. Guess again. And he's also pointed out that there may be a control system operating in which the aliens themselves are manipulating our perception of who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And the caller also pointed out that the military has made such a hodgepodge out of the various situations that it's hard to tell who's telling the truth and who isn't. There's no question that that statement is true. Indeed, that is the very nature of disinformation. Jacques Vallée is right when he says that the whole field is loaded from top to bottom with deception. That deception is coming from at least
least three places. Place number one, our own military, our own government structure, which has had a huge stake in all of this deception. Number two, the aliens are foisting deception on us without a doubt. And third of all, of course, each and every one of us personally is prone to self-deception. This is an easy place to get completely screwed up and deluded, and we have to stop every couple of minutes and say, wait a minute, maybe I'm dead wrong.
Well, all of that together creates an awfully large noise level, doesn't it?
You bet, a very large noise level. The signal is a very hard one to find, and you really have to hold out. I always say to my audiences, please do not jump to the ready answer. You need, above all in this field, a high tolerance for ambiguity. We don't have the answer.
All right, on the toll-free line, you're on the air with Michael Lindemann. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Linda from Maple Valley, Washington.
Yes.
My question is for Michael, is it possible that this wave is because it takes them such a long time to get here and get back, and what does he think about different dimensions?
All right.
Well, the question of dimensions is an important one. It raises all kinds of philosophical as well as physical science level questions that I'm not prepared to answer. Is it possible that they're flitting in and out of dimensions? Sure, it's just as possible that they're doing that as it is that they're traveling through time, which I regard as a possibility, or that they're using some sort of hyperdrive. I mean, for heaven's sake, for the last 25 years, we've been hearing that the Star Trek people have something that they call warp, and indeed, if we were ever going to really travel around the stars, we would need something like that. Jules Verne, 100 years ago, said we'd be flying through the skies or you know, traveling in submarines under the ice caps. He was right, as it happens, but that was 100 years ago. Now, are we going to come up with this technology? Maybe. Have they come up with it? Quite probably. Does it take them a really long time to come from star A to here? I doubt it. I don't think we would see the numbers we see if it was really a matter of them traveling years and years and years to get here. I think that is extremely improbable. There must be some other way to do it.
All right, Michael, hold on just a sec. We'll be right back to you. Michael Lindemann is my guest. Still time to get in if you would like to try. I know the lines are awfully clogged, but be patient. You will get through. Absolutely. Michael Lindemann, where are you calling from?
Yes, sir.
Okay, here we go again. Now, short on time now. You're on the air with Michael Lindemann. Where are you calling from, please? No, you're not. We'll go here to the wildcard line. You're on the air with Michael Lindemann. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Matt in Portland.
Hi, Matt.
Hi, Michael. Great show, Art.
Thank you.
Dan from the University District asked Michael, I guess, on another occasion about the reptiles. I'd just like to get Michael's input on that.
All right.
I'm sorry, about the what?
The reptiles.
Oh.
Well, there are several kinds of aliens often described. The most commonly described in this country, of course, is the grays, the slightly built gray characters with the large black eyes. The humanoid type, the type that look essentially like us, is the next most often reported, and then the third most often reported are so-called reptilians. Humanoid type beings that have reptilian type features, that is perhaps scaly skin or skin of a greenish tone, a very muscular build, large claws in some cases, large teeth, odd facial features. Do these beings exist? Well, I would say the answer is I don't know, but the reports are very, very frequent. And so if these people who are reporting them aren't crazy, then we have to assume it's possible that they could exist.
They would be my least favorite. If you're talking about ones to meet up with, I'm not wild about reptiles anyway. On the toll-free line, you're on the air with Michael Lindemann. Hello.
Yes. Where should we know that aliens do actually exist?
Where are you, sir? Okay. Well, I guess we just missed that one. On the first-time caller line, you're on the air with Michael Lindemann.
Hello. This is Mike calling from Seattle.
Hi, Mike.
I'm a MUFON member up here, and we're busily getting out these Roswell declarations also.
Great.
And I just wanted to throw in an idea. What we're doing is not only sending them to MUFON headquarters, we're sending a copy, duplicate copy, to each one of our representatives. And I wanted to, if possible, give out my phone number, because anybody in Washington State who wants to call me, I'll pay the postage and send a copy of a blank declaration to
them. I'm sorry, caller. Without checking it out, I can't just let you give out a phone number.
Okay.
I'm terribly sorry.
Let me just thank
you. Tell you what, if they want to come to the MUFON Audubon meeting at the Boswell Library on July 16th. They can get a copy there.
That's fine.
That's good. Let me just comment real quickly that that part of the overall strategy is that when there is a cutoff date, which is sometime in the late fall, I don't know exactly when, at that time, all of the declarations that have been received are going to be compiled, and they will be divided out according to congressional districts so that copies of the declaration will be sent. The number that were sent from any district will be sent to that district representative, and the entire thing will also be sent to key members of the administration, including the president and the vice president. So, you're in effect, caller, you're doing something that's a little redundant, but I think it should be done. I think your representatives should know, and I applaud your effort.
All right, good. On the toll-free line, you're on the air with Michael Lindemann. Good evening.
Well, goodness gracious, I finally got on.
Yes, where are you?
I pushed redial.
Where are you, sir?
I'm in Spokane, Washington.
All right.
And we're kind remiss because we don't have any sightings around here very much. All we had was somebody shooting the hell out of about 21 people at the Air Force base, and then about 4 days later, a B-52 crashed at the same place, and nobody mentioned a thing about it. But on the other hand, I think this is fascinating, and I...
Well, yes, sir. On my regular program, my syndicated program, we talked a great deal about what happened up there.
Good. I missed it.
Yes,
I wish
did.
You were on more in this genre every night instead of more toward the political thing, but that's another...
Well, now, wait a minute. You just complained about lack of coverage, and I just told you we covered it, and now you're saying you want this.
No, you shouldn't have covered it. The media should have.
I see. Anyway, do you have a question?
You're a special entity. I don't have a question so much as I'm just in total awe at what's going on. Most of my experiences are spiritual in nature, and gosh, this opens up a whole new area of bewilderment to me. What can we expect in the future? I mean, is this the strange goings on in the sky that we're not supposed to look at that's described in the Bible, or what?
All right. There is a good question.
There's a good question. Well, I think we touched on that earlier. There are, of course, many prophecies from the Bible as well as other scriptures around the world indicating this is a very special time. There may be events that occur over the next couple of years that have the appearance of the fulfillment of prophecy. I believe we are going to... gradually, we are, as I said earlier, coming of age in the cosmic neighborhood. We are learning that we are part of a very broad, very diverse neighborhood of cosmic intelligences. Many of these beings do not look like us. Some seem to look rather like us, but we're just getting to know the neighbors, and we, in fact, are the new kids on the block. It's going to be a very interesting time.
Yes, it will. On the toll-free line, you're on the air with Michael Lindemann. Hello, where are you calling from, please?
Southern California?
Yes, sir.
Hi, I had two questions. The first one is about the planet Jupiter and the impact of the comet Levy-Schumacher that's supposed to be...
Shoemaker-Levy 9.
Right.
The remnants of it. Yes, good question.
And, of course, you know, what sort of activity may we expect to see from here on Earth or up in the sky?
All right, thank you. We're going to have to hold it there. We're so short on time. Shoemaker-Levy 9, the impact of the pieces.
Well, as Linda said earlier, the impact will begin approximately July 16th. This is considered to be the greatest astronomical event of the century. Every telescope that is available on Earth will be looking at it. And, of course, we also have the Galileo spacecraft out near Jupiter right now that is going to try its best to take a look at it. Part of the problem is that the events are occurring on the backside of Jupiter with respect to our vantage point. However, interestingly, the impact points are only approximately 10 minutes away from the horizon because Jupiter turns very fast. So they're hoping that they're going to see very large amounts of residual light and other manifestations of energy. They are calling these impacts the largest explosions that have ever occurred in recorded history inside of our solar system. Now, what will that mean on our planet? It ranges from, depending on who you ask, it won't mean anything at all except a darn good astronomical event, out to predictions by some people who may be a little bit shrill in their notions, that this could have very large, even catastrophic events, that it could precipitate, for example, Earth changes. People think that this may be a trigger. I frankly strongly doubt that scenario.
So do I, Michael. Do you think it's a big snowball or is it a hunk of iron?
You mean what's coming in?
Yeah.
Well, according to our best estimates, it's closer to a snowball than a hunk of iron.
All right. We're so short on time. Michael, the Roswell Declaration, so important. One more time, give everybody, please, your address so they can get it.
Right. Send a stamped address self envelope to... Say that again.
A stamped self-addressed envelope. There we go. To Michael Lindemann. That's L-I-N-D-E-M-A-N-N. The address is 3463 State Street, Box 264, Santa Barbara, California, 93105. And when you get the declaration, I would appreciate it if you would read it, sign it, send it in to the address on the declaration. But even better yet, when you get it, if you know people who might want a copy, make copies first, hand them out, and then sign it and send it in.
So you not only don't object to making copies,
please,
you
go,
encourage
it.
And what about people who will make copies and then fax it to other people? Is that legitimate as well?
I see no problem with that. Make sure that they get both sides, however. It's a two-sided document.
All right. Michael, we're out of time. That's it. Another wonderful appearance on the program. And, of course, we will have you back again.
Thank you so much, Art. It's been a blast.
And if you get a chance to supply me with contact information on Carla Turner, I'd sure love it.
I will do that.
Michael,
happy to.
Michael, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Take care. Michael Lindemann, and I'm sorry, everybody, there is never enough time on this program. There is never enough time. If you would like a copy of this program or any Dreamland program, the number to call is area code 503-664-7966. Once again, and you can call it 24 hours a day, the magic number is area code 503-664-7966. They will get you a copy of any Dreamland program we've done since the inception. Thank you all. Good night. This has been Dreamland, a program dedicated to an examination of areas in the human experience not easily nor neatly put in a box. Things seen at the edge of vision, awakening a part of the mind as yet not mapped. Yet things every bit as real as the air we breathe but don't see. Please join us again next week at this time for Dreamland.